Everybody ready? This is the Charlie Polillo Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Tri-Eagle Energy.
Tri-Eagle Energy.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Charlie Polillo.
All right, back half of the program for this Monday. Much more Rockets, Warriors, a little bit of Astros, the back half of this hour, but as promoted. Eddie George in studio for this segment and next, the impetus for his visit. Chicago coming to Jones Hall, the musical, June 4th through the 9th. And, well, we have the lead, Mr. Billy Flynn, joining us in studio. This is now the longest-running American musical ever. Right, Katz's record? Or maybe Katz's English originally? Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm a man of the arts, but...
American.
Not my foremost area.
American.
I know it's American. Yeah. Did it break the Cats record? It did break Cats' record. See there? Try to learn something new every day, Jose. So Eddie's in town doing promotion today for tickets. SpaHouston.org. SPAHouston.org, as in Society of Performing Arts. It'll be at Jones Hall. I don't know if you've peeked in there before. Maybe in 1996
you did. I was trying to. I'm staying right across the street. From the building, it is gorgeous from the outside, but I wasn't allowed in there today because they're having auditions for this impetus.
The acoustics. I mean, the whole thing.
Man,
so much ground to cover in a couple of segments, but let's start with what has you here. I know you had some performing arts education from an early age. Touch upon that, and then how the bug, I guess, really bit you post playing career.
Well, a little bit. Growing up in Philadelphia as a youngster, my mother forced me to go to Freedom Theater every Saturday in North Philadelphia. And I hated going. I wanted to be outside with my friends playing football, basketball, baseball, anything than running around in leotards and dancing. That's not – well, it wasn't me. But over time, after I finished playing a game of football – it's kind of led me back to that. It's kind of found me, so to speak, because I was like, well, what am I going to do next? I was in business and so forth. That was fine. And I was doing commentating. I was getting some auditions to be in movies and so forth. It wasn't going so well. And just like me, I'm an ambitious person. And if I'm going to do something, I'm going to go all out. I'm going to be all in, 100%. So I said, well, if I'm going to get into acting, I'm going to take acting classes. And that's what I did. I got with a 5'3" feisty Italian woman by the name of Anna Maria Franzella, who was my acting coach, who recently passed away about a year and a half ago, and worked with her for about 3 years before I jumped on stage. And actually, she was the one that gave me the confidence to say, hey, you know, after hearing you speak, I want to work on your voice to have you be a better speaker, to be more aware of your voice. And after she took me through a couple of, you know, sessions on my voice lessons, she says, you can sing. See, I was like, woman, please, look, let's just do these lessons so I can just go on and do Shakespeare or some other role.
And they sing in the shower.
Sing in the shower, whatever that is. And she says, no, you really can sing. So she had me work on the various songs. And all the actually, one of the first songs that I worked on was All I Care About Is Love. And her son... Mark was on Broadway as one of the dancers in the ensemble on Broadway years ago. So she had all these pictures of Chicago up and so forth. So fast forward, I guess, 12 years later from that point on, I found myself on a Broadway stage auditioning for the lead producer of the show, Barry Weisler, and... And got the role of Billy Flynn in 2016 and performed it on Broadway for 8 weeks. And from that point on, I guess they really enjoyed what I was able to do. They saw some potential, and now I'm doing it all over the country.
All right, I'm not making an apple-to-apple comparison, mm-hmm. but how would you equate the adrenaline rush of whether coming out of the tunnel as a Buckeye or getting ready to take the field for a Super Bowl?
Absolutely.
Live performance theater, and the first time you're in a venue that, you know, not knocking community theater at all, which is fantastic, and this is one of the great cities in the country for it, but that you're playing the version of the horseshoe, you know, when you're going into these significant venues.
Yeah. Well, I played in some other venues. The one in Houston wasn't shabby either. I played in Houston, in Dallas. Was really gorgeous. I've been in various venues throughout the country. But the story is to be told. Yeah, as a performer, as an actor, or even as an athlete, you have the pregame warmups to really look at and take in your environment. And after that, when the lights go up or when the game starts, you're engaged in the present moment, and that's telling a story or trying to score a touchdown or impose your will on somebody. So the intimidation factor is just never there. You know, it'll become a distraction. So I more or less really rely on being the character and allowing the character to tell a story, whether I'm performing in a black box theater in Nashville, Tennessee, or on the stage or the boards of the Ambassador Theater in New York City, or here in Houston. So it really doesn't matter the venue. The goal is to tell a story and to entertain the audience.
In a different way, does it scratch a little bit of the competitive urge that there is no do-over? Right? When you're doing live, it's that one play in that one moment, right. And it's not competition against an opponent per se, but just the rush that comes with it.
No question. Every night when I wait in the wings of the theater before I go on stage, it's the same adrenaline rush that I get before a game. You know, when I waited in the tunnel before our player introductions, before I ran on the field, and then you feel the roar, you hear the roar of the fans, you hear the fireworks, the planes going over the stadium, the music that's being played, all the buildup that goes into you coming out on the football field. I get the same type of feelings behind stage. You know, when that song comes on, you know, where's Billy? B-I-L-L-Y. You know, and here he is, and you got to come out there with the same energy. It's the same exact feeling. But instead of once a week, I have to do it four times a week, and twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday. And it takes a different kind of energy. So each and every time I do Chicago, I feel so fortunate and blessed. I mean, gosh, man, I'm thinking to myself on the plane down, man, I was just on stage at the Nashville for the draft, celebrating our draftees and our city and so forth. That was a rush. And now I'm in Houston promoting a show to do Chicago on Broadway. Man, that is quite a life to have. You know what I'm saying? It really is.
And I know Houston's bidding to get the draft at some point in years forward. Yes. But man, Nashville looked like Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Brother, I've been to Times Square on New Year's Eve, and it was magical. It really is. It's nothing like it. First time I did it was the year I went on Broadway to do Chicago. But this was absolutely incredible. 600,000 fans over the course of 3 days was in Nashville at that spot on Broadway.
I mean, I know a lot of people obviously are in from out of town for it, but basically that's like having more than half of Nashville turn out.
No question. Absolutely. It was amazing. And it was not just fans of the Tennessee Titan fans, of course, but it was fans from all across the world. Bengals, the Cincinnati Bengals fans were there. It was, of course, the Texans. I mean, just every fan imaginable from every that represented every team were engaged, were excited. And the beautiful thing there was no riffraff. There was no violence. It was just fans there to enjoy the city of Nashville, enjoy these draftees getting drafted, celebrating their team, celebrating football, enjoying the music, the whole element, the energy, the vibe. It was amazing. It was like nothing. It had the vantage point from the stage look out on Broadway all the way up the street. It was like six blocks full of people. It looked like you said, Times Square on New Year's Eve. It was amazing.
Eddie George in studio, June 4th through 9th, Chicago at Jones Hall. We'll circle back to that. We'll talk some football past and present with Eddie George in the segment coming back.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to the Charlie Polillo Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Tri-Eagle Energy. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Charlie Polillo.
All right, slow jam bump exception bringing us out of the break. And this is no coincidence, as our guest will attest.
So nice.
Eddie
so
George
sweet.
In studio. Mrs. Eddie George on the vocals.
Yes.
SWV, number one hit in America. back in the day. And do I have this right? You better get a happy birthday in here, right?
Yes, it's a happy birthday. I'm not going to say which birthday it is, but it's
29 again.
She's 29 again. And yes, actually, we're in Houston 2 days ago performing at the TSU, the maroon and white, I think, mm-hmm. cherry and white, I think. Affair. So it was really wonderful to see her here.
I've read this before. You can give a radio version of it. Pretty amusing the way you met the future Mrs. George.
Oh, man. You know, we met twice. I met her in 1994 when we were playing in Orlando. We were playing Alabama in the Citrus Bowl.
Were you just a really, really good Ohio State Buckeye at that point?
Yeah. Yes, I was good. I was second team All Big Ten or my honorable mention. I can't remember. And I saw her in the mall shopping for some gifts. And I said, man, you know, me and Sean Springs, my teammate. And he says, man, that's a girl from SWE. And he was like, man, go over and get her autograph. And I was like, nah, she looks busy. I don't want to bother. He says, well, who are you? I said, my name is Eddie. He says, well, that's right. Eddie George. Go over there and get an autograph. So I go over there, get her autograph. And she's like, well, I'm busy. Like I said, like I expected. I'm looking for my family. I can't help you right now. And she was really frustrated. And I was like, man, she wasn't very nice. And I said, I'll never listen to your music again. And lo and behold, a calendar year later, I'm in New York for the Heisman Trophy. I win the Heisman. And I go to Chad's and Wilson, a jazz bar uptown in Harlem. And I'm there with my friends. We're celebrating at the bar. And lo and behold, I see her walk by. And I was like, oh, there's Taj from SWV. My, things have changed since then. Let's see how this all unfolds.
Now you're a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, Heisman Trophy winner. My face was all on the TV and across the country, feeling good about life. And lo and behold, I get a tap on my shoulder, and it's her girlfriend. And she says, my friend wants to meet you. I was like, okay. So I'll play along with it. I go over and I see Taj. She's waiting for me. And I said, hey, my first thing I say to her, I said, I met you a year ago in the mall in Orlando, and I asked you for your autograph, and you were reluctant of giving it to me. She says, do you remember that by any chance? She says, no. I said, okay. She was so pretty. I said, you know what? Let bygones be bygones. Let's start new. And then we started talking from that point on and continue to stay in touch and be friends throughout the years. And finally, we just said, hey, man, we were meant to be together. We've been together for going on 15 years now, June 20th of this year. So it's been an amazing run.
Oh, congrats, and just a great story I thought was worth working on the program here. It's not as if guys never left school early back when you were coming out of Ohio State, but mm-hmm. it wasn't the almost automatic now. So if you came along now, do you think you'd have gone back for your senior season and won the Heisman, or do you think you'd have been in the draft as a junior?
Well, now, there was so much talent at Ohio State back then that I had to wait my turn. So I needed those years of development to jump into the NFL. For a running back, I would say if you played your sophomore or junior year and you have dominated on that level, that you should come out, because from a business perspective in the NFL, you want to have a chance to get at least 3 or possibly 4 contracts during your run versus 2 or 3 if you stay longer, because the lifespan of a running back is very short. And that's due to the pounding, is due to age, is due to the fact that they really don't want to pay running backs that much money anymore. They try to hide behind the fact that, oh, we really don't need the running game. We're going to invest all our cash into the quarterback and everything that affects the passing game. Pass rushers, corners, receivers, tight ends,
and
so forth.
Just rotate backs.
Right, rotate backs. But the great teams, the teams that won it all, they emphasize the run game, and they understand the importance of having a bell horse running back. So when you look at Dallas, they're investing in Ezekiel Elliott. You look at the Jets, who just paid Le'Veon Bell. They're looking for that every down back that can do it all. Derrick Henry is emerging as one of the great running backs in this league. If he remains consistent, so you have to have that guy. I don't know. I think looking back, knowing what I know now, if I had a junior year the way I had my senior year, then absolutely I would leave without question.
Eddie George with us in studio, starring in Chicago, Jones Hall, June 4th through the 9th, Spa Houston, spahouston.org for tickets and more information. So you're drafted after winning the Heisman Trophy by the Houston Oilers in what, of course, was a very interesting time in the franchise's
yes.
history, basically getting ready, marking time to move to Tennessee. You're selected a year after Steve McNair. Rest in peace, Steve McNair. So here's the nucleus to build a great offense into the next era of Oiler football. So I'm sure you're coming into the NFL off winning the Heisman Trophy.
Uh-huh.
It's an exciting time. But what a funky rookie season. Your last game mm-hmm. as an Oiler, I remember Barry Sanders at his peak. I think there was 12,400-something at the Astrodome because the team was leaving. The team wasn't bad. I think you finished 8-8, something like that.
Yeah.
But it was just a messy situation. How do you think back of your one season in Houston?
Well, I was just trying to make the adjustment to come into the NFL. And I wanted to be – I wanted to come in with all my tires running on the ground, and you know, engines running, and just come in and really make a mark and an impact early. So I really wasn't totally aware of the situation. I was hoping that they could work something out so we wouldn't have to move, so it wouldn't be a distraction. I knew of the love affair for Love You Blue down here, being a huge fan of football, very familiar with Earl Campbell and his run in the 80s, of course, Warren Moon and the House of Pain days and the run and shoot. I was very familiar with that brand of football, and I was a big fan of it. And I understood how passionate the Houstonians were about the Oilers. So I was hoping that something miraculous could happen in the days that we were here, that they could work on a deal, get a new stadium, and appease all parties. But that didn't happen. So my time here, the short time I had here, I met a lot of friends in the community. I mean, people just loved their football down here. And I still have friends here in Houston, and they remember my time here in 96, which, you know, wasn't a great thing. You know, we went 8-8 and we were on the outs, but they were still very passionate about it. And, I often think about what life would have been like had we been here in Houston during our run. But, you know, I think it all worked out in the end. You know, Houston got the Texans. We became the Titans. We really became a pillar in the community in Nashville, Tennessee, bringing the NFL to Middle Tennessee, which you never really think of. You think of that state as being a college state, which pretty much is with the Volunteers and Vanderbilt. And just the surrounding cities and states, they really focus on college football. But, you know, we really put the NFL on the map in the central part of the country.
So you leave here, you go the Tennessee Oilers for a couple of years, and, of course, now you're going to commute to your home games. So on one level, you're playing 16 road games. How bizarre an experience was that?
That was tough because every week we were traveling. We were on a plane every single week. We practiced in Nashville and flew to Memphis to play. And that was a debacle, I think, for all fronts, because Memphis didn't appreciate it. It had, as Steve Underwood would put it, one-night stand qualities around it. You know,
but not built to last.
Not built to last at all. And they didn't appreciate that at all. So we, as a result, we didn't get a lot of fans in the stands. We didn't get a lot of support. We were often booed when we went out on the field. And we moved back to Nashville, hoping that if we moved into Vanderbilt, we would get some type of support. And the same thing happened. It wasn't until we decided, or Bud decided, to change the name, have the fans involved in the name, changing of the name, have them involved in the changing of the uniform, the colorways, that we really got their support. And they felt like we were now Tennessee's team versus a team that came from Houston and just, here, you know, take it or leave it. This is what you're going
to
get.
And a run to the Super Bowl, of course. Those mm-hmm. ties that bind accelerate.
Exactly.
Approaching 20 years later, do you still have visions of Dyson and Mike Jones? You're kind of sort of over it by now.
Both. I think about what life would have been like had Kevin crossed the goal line. We still would have had to either kick the field goal or the extra point to go into overtime, or possibly go for two to win the game. I felt as though if we had been going to overtime, the Rams were just completely wiped and tired, that we would have found a way to win that ball game and been Super Bowl champions for the 2000 season, or the 99 season, rather. But I think the way it ended, we still were regardless champions because of how we fought and how that season ended up. And it started off, our playoff run started off with the Music City Miracle. And then we had to travel up to Indianapolis and play a hot Indianapolis team led by Peyton Manning and a young Edgerrin James and Marvin Harrison, that trio. Found a way to beat them. And then to go on the road to play a dominant Jacksonville Jaguar team who were
14-2 that year.
14-2. The only two losses were against us. And it was unheard of for a team to beat a team three times in 1 year.
Jeff Fisher called whatever the stadium was called back then, and it's our second home.
Our second home. Oh, man, he just ripped it in.
Let's put the bullseye right on our back.
Yeah. But the pressure, they succumbed to the pressure. The Jaguars did, and we found a way to beat them for a third time and go into that run. So you look at all of that, and yes, we lost in the Super Bowl, but we still felt like we've accomplished something. And people still remember that run that we had and the Super Bowl that we played in against the Rams. And it's the fact that they can recall that and call it one of the greatest Super Bowls that people still remember, I'm cool with that.
A couple other things I want to ask you about. Alluded to it a little bit earlier in terms of how so many teams deploy running backs these days. Ezekiel Elliott led the NFL in rushing attempts last season with 304. Mm-hmm. He was the only back in the NFL with 300 carries. You're 8 years in the league, leaving off the last season with the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
You had at least 312 carries all 8 years, one of the few backs in history to have 400 carries in a season in 2000. I don't want to say run into the ground because you had eight prime years, but you look at the workloads on running backs in this era, do you say, you know what? Hey, you were critical to a team winning and having sustained success, mm-hmm. but it may have cost you a couple of years off the back end of your career.
Well, no. Because the pieces and parts just weren't there. I did the bulk of my work playing inside a telephone booth, basically, against great defenses. I faced at least top four, the top five defense total defense of teams like Pittsburgh,
Baltimore,
Jacksonville, Cincinnati. They were all ranked in the top five in total defense during that time, or top 15. I can't think of the exact stat. But with really no passing game, or a threat of a passing game. It was Frank Wycheck, but we weren't known to be able to throw the football around the yard to create balance. They knew it was going to be me in between the tackles and a tight end on third down, and you had to find a way to stop it. And we had a great offensive line. So it was difficult. So I didn't mind getting the ball. I wanted the football. I wanted to carry the load. But that's who we were at that particular time in hopes of, you know, creating more balance in the future.
So given that, we're about 45 now?
45 on the nose, yep.
Obviously, you get around on the stage fine and a man of many interests, genetics, taking care of your body, post-playing career.
Mm-hmm.
Great shape. Do you wake up with aches and pains? Can you tell when it's going to rain?
It depends on the day of the week. If I play around the golf, I can usually feel it in my back. My psoas, so meaning that my abdomen, shoulders at night. Sometimes I got to sleep with a pillow under this, both arms, just to get some relief off my shoulders. But for the most part, I've been able to walk and talk and still train effectively. My knees have given me some problems, but I had a procedure done on my knees from stem cell, and they feel amazing at this point in time, going on a full year. And I watch my diet, you know, in terms of what I'm eating, cutting out sugar.
Yoga guy? Is that what I said?
Love yoga. Absolutely love yoga because it really centers me from a holistic perspective. So I'm always looking to keep being the best physical shape that I can possibly be so I can run around with my kids and my grandkids one day.
Restaurants both in Nashville and Columbus?
Just one restaurant, two restaurants in Columbus, one in the Grandview Yards in Columbus, Ohio, and one in the airport. And that falls under my entrepreneurship umbrella, yes.
A couple quickies on the way out. So were you an Eagles guy growing up?
I was. Yes, I was.
Was Wilbert Montgomery your Wilbert running Montgomery. Back role model?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I love Wilbert.
How about to this era, a couple of guys you appreciate watching, if not even to this era, over the last 15, 20 years, that man, as a fellow running back, I respect the way that guy handles his business.
Well, Jim Brown, obviously, I think, no question. Earl Campbell, LaDainian Tomlinson. I think he had a remarkable career, obviously, Hall of Fame career. Marshall Faulk, who I've competed against, Jerome Bettis. Nowadays, I would say Ezekiel Elliott. I appreciate his game. He can play in any era. Le'Veon Bell is also an intriguing guy who can make guys miss at his size and has the ability to be effective in a passing game. And, of course, Adrian Peterson. He's a generational back. You know, he's a kid that's 6'1", 210 pounds now, and he looks like he could still play another 15 years if he chooses to do so.
Hey, you're starting in Chicago. Get in the Sweetness reference.
Oh, absolutely. And how could I forget?
The late, great.
The late, great Walter Payton, number 34, Sweetness. Absolutely.
So if for the rest of your days you could only watch college football or the NFL in that impossible choice to make a choice.
College.
Just a unique level of passion.
You know, it's the pageantry.
I guess when you come out of Ohio State, there's an extra.
Well, yeah, it's the rivalries. In the NFL, you don't have the rivalries anymore in terms of players. And you look forward to the Giants playing against Randall Cunningham. You know, Lawrence Taylor versus Randall Cunningham. Myself against Ray Lewis. I mean, those rivalries aren't quite there anymore. When you look forward to Emmitt versus Barry Sanders, I mean, it's really tough to find that nowadays. Now, I love watching college football because there's a lot more on the line. It's a little bit more exciting. The 14 playoff is always great. So yeah, I prefer college at this point. Maybe because my son played college ball too. So
understood.
Yeah.
Society of Performing Arts Houston, bringing Eddie George and Chicago to town. Jones Hall, June 4th through the 9th. Matinees Saturday, Sunday, in addition to the evening shows. SPAHouston.org for further information and, of course, tickets. Eddie, this was a blast. I appreciate you
I enjoyed
coming
it, man.
In.
It and, was you know, really
what,
fun.
What might have been back in 1996 before he came on the air, I said I was a little younger, snottier nose kid covering you as a rookie. No reason to remember at all, but glad I got the extended.
Well, hopefully you can come out to the show.
Definitely have intentions to do so.
Thanks. Absolutely. Again, Eddie. Thank you.